District 32, Business Radio. Insights and inspiration. District 32. By today's business leaders.
This is Alan Cox from District 32 Business Radio. Today I'm here with Peter Stuhlsbauer from Martana. Peter, how did you get into business? How did you get started?
Well, many years ago I started just doing contracting work because I didn't want to actually be associated with an employer, be an employee. So just dealt with contracts from business to business. At some point, I decided that I needed to actually structure myself a little bit better, as you need to do various reporting to government agency, the ATO, etc. So I decided to actually formalise myself into a company structure and try to provide further services to companies and organisations.
So what inspired you to get into the cybersecurity business?
Well, security for me has always been around and on top of my mind for at least like 20 years. I remember when I was first looking to go overseas and setting up with my accountant and property manager and various other people here, family, and thinking about being overseas and communicating through email and being in a sort of secure way of communication with them. So I started looking into it and started looking at doing certificates and encryption. So I always was thinking about how to protect my information, getting to someone else and for them to communicate with me and know that they're talking to me and not someone else. And over the years, sort of whenever I'm talking to someone, security isn't top of mind for them, and they don't think anything of sending an email with, you know, credit card details or scans of their driver's license, passport, or anything like that. And as far as they're concerned, it's going directly to the person that they're emailing to. But email system as it is jumps all around the world, may do one or two hops before it gets to you, or it might do a million hops, and any one of those hops could be dangerous.
Sounds a bit scary. What challenges in business, you know, getting your business started, did you face?
The challenges always is getting the name out there and the word of mouth, you know, understanding what you actually do and what services you provide. Providing the various contracting services that I do is usually been with the big end of town. So they're only wanting to deal with certain approved vendors. So you're needing to actually communicate through them. It's also, I guess, understanding that you are a business. Even if you are contracting, that you need to be looking after your own business needs and be more sort of business focused.
When you say, so you actually get the major companies, security companies, contract you?
With the cybersecurity side of the business, I decided to actually start looking at that and focusing towards small to medium businesses in the last 12 months and looking at how I could actually provide those services to those businesses. But the other side of my business on the consulting side, which has been payroll and HR, which is very much a concern of the privacy of that information. And the systems I work with in that area is the larger type of corporations that I work with.
So what flaws are there in those systems?
Well, it's not a matter of having flaws in those systems.
Or holes,
it's,
maybe.
It's having the, you know, employee information on the system and knowing to actually treat it accordingly, that not everyone can have access to it. And when you're building the system, testing the system to put in for a client, you need to actually take security in mind and the privacy of that information and making sure that if you're looking to report anything to the board in regard to how the progress of the business is or the implementation is going, that you remove any information that can be identified to an individual. So only provide enough information to get the message across.
So it's not so much in that case, it's not so much cybersecurity, it's just normal
privacy of information. And cybersecurity, you have the privacy of the information there because you're always communicating with someone and looking to put some type of information towards them. And understanding where that information is, how that information or does that information need to go to someone, and the privacy of that, your own personal information.
Peter's got a tip around cybersecurity, and it's phishing. And I don't think he's talking about the fishing rod and smelly bait. Peter, what sort of phishing are you talking about?
Talking about phishing? Well, in some ways, it's, yes, with a fishing rod, but in this instance, it's online type of phishing, whereby threat activists, they're looking to try and get hold of information, send out some type of bait through an email, which could be a massive sort of email spam that you receive, and a lot of people receive in their inboxes or into their junk folders. And that's an attempt to get you to read the email, click on the link, and follow through with that link and provide some information to them. Or it could be that at the very least that you've clicked on the link and they know that this email address is real. So they can then look to do further phishing towards that email address.
Yeah, it sounds scary. I actually got a text on my phone this morning, a message, SMS message, from somebody called Emily, and it said, you know, like, I forget what it was, I've deleted it, otherwise I'd show you, you know, encouraging me to click the link, you know, collect your prize or something, click the link. That's on the phone. Would that be likely to be a phishing exercise?
That would definitely be a phishing exercise. You know, you're aware yourself, Alan, that you haven't registered for any competitions or anything. So, yeah, they try different methods. Emails, a common one. Text messages is another. Or even doing a phone call to give you a call and then ask you for some information. And they may impersonate a bank that you actually are registered with. And I've had that in the past whereby the bank has phoned me and said they wanted to check some transactions of mine, which was fine. And then they start saying, well, we need to qualify that you are who you say you are, at which point I've turned around to them and said, no, well, as far as I'm concerned, this is a cold call, even though you're saying you're from the bank that I may actually be with. I'll call you. They then sort of turn around and actually give you a phone number to call them back so you can get through to them, which I'll jot down but actually ignore because I have a list of approved numbers or numbers I know for the bank and call back based on those numbers.
So if you actually called them back, then they've got your – well, they've already got your phone number, so what
– Well, it's a cold call to you. They're now saying, okay, I understand that you don't want to give private information, you know, to qualify who you are. Here's the number to call our centre, and you can ask for Emily as an example. We can then carry on through to actually check your transactions that you've put into the system that we want to verify.
But you finish up going back to the same people, obviously.
That's correct, yes. So the idea is that you actually be polite, et cetera, take their details down, and because they may actually be real. And so hang up, and if you need to, go to the website of the bank, find what their actual contact details, if you haven't got it on your contact list, call them and ask to be put through to the particular department and the particular person. Mm. And then if they were real, you can then carry on about in regard to the transactions that they wanted to query about.
What happens if you are caught if you take the bait?
Well, sometimes the bait is very sophisticated and it looks genuine enough that, you know, can actually trick you into giving that information away. Well, if you have done that and it turns out that they weren't real, they've got certain information from you. Once you sort of identify that you have been scammed in this instance, is then to turn around to your particular bank or maybe all the banks and notify them that what has happened and start taking action to change your details as much as you can. Date of birth, unfortunately, you can't change, even though a lot of people would like to change their date of birth.
Yes.
But at least put the banks on notice that something has happened and you have fallen for it, and what are the precautions that we need to take from that point?
I mean, I'm fairly astute with that in that regard, but I actually gave my credit card details to someone over the phone. Then I put the phone down. I said to my wife, I think I just got scammed. So I picked up the phone immediately and rang the bank and actually told them what had happened. And they then watched out for any transaction that came through. But, yeah, that was a pretty dumb thing to do.
But, you know, sometimes they call and they catch you at a, you know, in an opportune moment whereby, you know, you're busy doing something else and you just want to get on with that work that you're doing, and they sound legitimate enough, and so you decide to go for it. You know, it could be, you know, to give a donation or something, and so
I can't remember what it was, but you know, anyway,
yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and everything sounded right. They were very pleasant and didn't want to take up too much of your time, etc. And you know. Yeah, but you did the right thing.
You're making me feel better. You're making me feel better, even though it was a stupid thing to do. Anyway, Peter, thanks very much for that. Yeah, Peter, thank you for that. Is there anything else that somebody can do to protect themselves against phishing?
Well, in regard to protection in, especially in a business context, and a lot of this applies personally as well as for business. From a business point of view, training your employees to know what to look out for in a phishing email or from a call, and to ask the right questions, and if you've got any concerns to hang up on the person and, you know, say that you actually call them back up and contact your security team. For the smaller organisations, maybe you've got someone else outsourced that helps you with your IT systems or your cybersecurity, and you give them a call and talk them through what has happened and see what you can do. So training is very, very important. Be suspicious. You know, when you receive a cold call, and ask the questions, and just keep it in mind at all times. With the emails, no matter how legitimate they look, be careful with those. Hover over the links and see what comes out on those links. The email address as well. Sometimes it won't be a real email address. Other times it can be a real email address, but the links at the end of the day will be to somewhere else whereby they can actually harvest information from you.
So that's a good tip, that one. Hover your mouse over the actual email and it comes up and shows you the address.
It usually will show you down at the bottom of the email or over the actual where the mouse is hovering.
Is it dangerous to right click and copy the link?
No, you could actually do that and copy that into a document, a notepad or something, just to have a look at it, because sometimes these links can look very, very close to being the real thing, and it may just have another dot in there somewhere, or have a number one for an L or an I. So when you look at it quickly, it looks real enough. And you, from that, you'll click on the link. But, yeah, try to actually study the link. And if it's something that you believe that you really need to go and visit to check your credentials or whatever the email is mentioning to you, go to the actual website itself. You know what the organisation is. Type in that organisation or do a search if you need to and visit the actual organisation email address or email site and follow the links through to actually log in and verify your account details. Business email compromise is whereby someone's got hold of your email and sending you an email or maybe another organisation's email address and sending you an email and to try and fraudulently get money out of you. The most sort of common one is like receiving an invoice. So you receive an invoice and you look to pay that invoice, but in actual fact, that invoice bank details are not of the company that you're meant to be paying.
How do they get hold of that information?
Well, maybe from the phishing, whereby they did a phishing email to your organisation or one of your vendor organisations and being able to get into that system, get hold of the details. You may have clicked on a link and needed to download and install some software. So you've basically got hold of some malware, installed it onto your PC, and that's given them the door into your organisation. They've then been able to get onto your email system and actually track your emails. So the emails you send out as you would normally, but they actually get diverted or intercepted by this other group. They then got the opportunity to make a change, say on the invoice itself, just to change the bank details. So everything else looks the same letterhead, etc., and then send it on to the original recipient that's to get the email. So the person that does receive the email sees it's come from the usual vendor company, another invoice to be paid, and instead of making it nice and convenient because all the information's on the email, to actually work off that email and pay the invoice based on that, as they've done month in, month out without any problems.
So what you've got to do is check against the actual paperwork or your original invoice.
Ideally, yes. At some point, you've been in contact with the vendor, setting them up on your system. So you've received their bank details and you've entered it into the system. What I usually do when I'm dealing with someone new and I need to pay their invoice, everyone finds the convenience of email and sending their invoices through the email. Nice and easy and quick, is I'll actually pick up that invoice and phone the person or the company and ask them to actually verify the BSB, the account number. And once I've actually achieved that, then look to actually pay it based on that invoice. And then going forward, I'm always checking my system against the invoice to see if there's a change. And if there's any differences in that, I'll then once again contact the company through my own contact information, not what's on the actual invoice. Because once again, that too could have been changed. So you call up the scammer's contact centre and verify with them, which they'll tell you that it is correct. It is correct for them, but not for your vendor.
So that even if it's in zero, it's all recorded in there. Can it still change?
With being in zero, yes, because you do have the actual link, but you can also attach a PDF. So if the actual PDF is attached, they may actually look at that and not look at the actual, clicking on the link. once again, you know, with a link, it could be not a real zero link. It could be almost zero.
Extra dot. Quite.
An extra dot or a change of the O to an actual zero. So you're then going off to the scammer's site and, yeah, you're verifying against that. You need to be considering much wider a field than just cybersecurity. You need to be thinking online as well as offline. So the physical protection as well. One of the things is if you're having someone coming into the organisation to do some work, you know, maybe some plumbing or electrical, that you've actually got their details, hopefully beforehand, and you can actually communicate that through to your team. So to expect someone to be coming in and what they will be doing. So if someone does arrive unannounced and saying they're looking to repair some plumbing, that you don't just let them in.
They're like a personal firewall.
That's right. Employees are your firewall, human firewall. So the first line of defence and the last line of defence. So they're always good to actually have them trained up and making sure that you actually provide them with the appropriate training to be able to spot things like someone walking into organisation or online, receiving emails and what to look out for.
It's very good. Now, what about data backing up? Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. That's another thing that organisations need to take seriously is to actually back up their data. They basically believe in having a 3-2-1 principle, which is three forms of backup, two of different media types, and one being offline or, yeah, in sort of cyberland, you could say.
What do you mean different media types?
Well, you may have on, say, a hard drive, portable hard drive, so having two versions of that. So, and you're swapping between those two, and you may actually take one of those and take that as well as to be off-site. So you've got a physical hard drive with your information backed up, and it's away from your organisation. So if anything happens to the company, you know, there's fire or some other type of break-in and things are taken, you've actually got your data saved online as well as physical somewhere else.
What about the cloud?
So cloud is one of those that is very good to be backing up to and whereby it can actually be backing up online as you're making changes. So you can have different versions of your information at different points in time. And that can make it very easy to actually recover from and to bring your business back running again.
Large files that I deal with sometimes, it's pretty difficult to back up off, you know, in the cloud because the files are just too damn big.
The files themselves, in which case a sort of physical backup may be more suited in that instance.
What about tools?
Yeah, one tool that I really recommend that every organisation and every individual should have is a password manager. We're constantly advised now to have a different password for each account that you log into. And as soon as you visit a website and you look to buy something, they want you to actually create an account with them. So you need to apply usually your email address as your account name and a password. And as you move along and you go to different, you know, websites, you're needing to have a password for those. And we've all fallen into the trap that you want to use a service there and then, and you'll use the same password that you've used before, which is not the way to do it.
No, but having it's a password, convenient.
It is convenient, yes. Is to take the extra moment or two and with a password manager, get it to generate a password. The longer the better, which we'll never remember because it's a lot of numbers and letters and dashes, et cetera, in there. So at least the password manager manages that. And when you visit the website again, it's able to populate into that website automatically for you.
Have you got any suggestions on the sort of password manager?
There are many out that you can use. I personally use 1Password, but there's Dashlane and LastPass, and there's a number of others out there.
Okay.
They have corporate versions as well as for personal use or family one. I have a family version, and that allows me to set up passwords like for home, for your Netflix and for your Wi-Fi at home, and then to share it with the family. So if I do change it, they can easily get to that.
What about multi-factor
authentication?
Authentication.
We've both been caught out with that.
Multi-factor authentication.
Yeah.
Two-factor authentication.
Or 2FA is...
2FA, that's easier.
That gives you another line of defence. And a lot of websites do provide that, so that you log in with your email address, your password, and then it will ask you for the 2FA, which is a six-digit number which is generated and it's synced in with your mobile device. And so it'll be unique for that 30 or 60 seconds usually. So you're able to type that in and then get into your email or whatever the website is.
Peter, we're out of time again. Thank you very much for your time and advice.
Thank you, Alan.
You've been listening to District 32 Business Experts that educate and inspire. District 32 Business Radio, Business Experts, throughout the hour on District 32, the power of connection.